Rambo, Bill Hendry.
I think you guys better start that again.
Right.
No, it's fine. No, start it all over again. Start it all over again, okay? Hi, guys. Welcome to the show. And apparently Bud and Robert didn't have their act together, so it's the Iron Swine theme, okay?
Yeah, what happened?
What happened was we couldn't hear it because we had the lineup. Chef Chedilia's factory was working there or something. I don't know what the hell happened. So you ready?
Yeah, go.
And now it's time for Iron Swine. And Iron Swine today, you got a call from a Twinkie shop.
Ring, 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 ring.
Yeah, hey, is this Iron Swine?
Yeah, what's up?
I got Chef Carl Chedilia here. He's going to eat a Twinkie. He eat one more Twinkie, and he's going to explode. I swear to God, the man will explode, and then I'm going to have a damn mess on my hands, you know.
Uh-oh, Chef Carl Chedilia is going to eat a Twinkie. I got to go get him to stop eat a Twinkie.
Yeah. And so Iron Swine got in the Iron Swine car, come down to a Twinkie factory.
Hey, Chef Carl Chedilia, what are you doing?
Well, I thought I'm going to have a Twinkie. I thought I had one.
Don't eat it. Don't eat the Twinkie. You're going to blow.
Oh, nobody can stop me having a Twinkie. I want to have it.
No, you fool!
Hey.
Chef Carl Chedilia just blowed himself up because he had a Twinkie.
Too bad, Chef.
I want to have a Twinkie.
Well, you can't have a Twinkie now. You're blowed up.
Oh, okay. Now can I have a Twinkie since
Yeah, you can have a Twinkie now since the Iron Swine's over.
Thanks, Chef.
That was great.
I didn't know he was in town.
Yeah, he was right around the corner.
Oh, he was right around the corner. I thought he was at his chef factory.
No, apparently he was at the mall.
What was he doing at the mall?
Probably getting... What are you doing at the mall, Chef?
I was just picking up some sugar.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot. All right, so that sucked.
Why'd that suck?
I don't know. It just didn't... the bomb explosion thing, man. You guys were using something from Afghanistan. Sounded weird. All right. Welcome back here. That was Chef Carl Chedilia in a rare appearance on Iron Swine as he eats an extra Twinkie and blows up. Boy, I'll tell you, the fat jokes, man.
Well, I think the fat jokes work.
Well, you're the king of the fat jokes. You're the guy that started all of that.
I didn't start. What do you mean I started all? I didn't start fat jokes.
Well, you're the one that took it to the extreme with the exploding fat people.
No, I did not. No, Monty Python is the one that did the ultimate fat. Monty Python did the ultimate fat guy when they had that guy eat the mint in, I forget which movie. What movie was it? It wasn't Holy Grail. It was Meaning of Life or something. And did you guys see it?
Uh-oh.
And it's famous because they got this fat guy, and he says, I swear to God, if I eat one more thing, I'm going to explode, or I forget what it was. He eats a mint and then just projectile vomits for about 10 minutes in the movie. So.
Oh, that's really funny.
Hey, Margaret, you're the one that said I invented the fat guy. I know I didn't. Monty Python did that like 30 years ago, 40 years ago. So, all right. It was even more than the throwing up puppet in Team America. Anyway, welcome back, and I don't know what the hell we're doing. It's the final hour. All kinds of news on about all kinds of things, but I was just noticing this. This might be, I don't know. For some reason, I've always enjoyed newspapers, and I mean, I really have always enjoyed newspapers. I know that newspapers are out of fashion to some extent. I think they're a bit of a nostalgia item for a lot of people, and I get that. I think that if we read newspapers at all, yes, we read them online. If, in point of fact, we even know what a newspaper is anymore. You know, there's a whole generation of people that won't know what a newspaper is. We have a generation coming up now of kids born, say, in the last, even since 2000, kids that are adolescents, who are vaguely familiar with newspapers, but it won't be anything that in 50 years anybody's going to have any real working memory of. Think about that, you know.
Kind of like what you were saying about, like, when your mom said,
what I was saying about when my mom said.
Yeah, what are you talking about, bud?
When his mom was talking about like a, what your mom said.
What did my mom say, man?
About that, your mom.
What about my mom?
You said what she said.
Well, what did she say? Because I don't remember.
I don't remember. You just seen your mom said something about it.
You know something, man? You gotta be a world record breaking idiot. What are you talking about when you said that my mom said something about what?
About what you're talking about.
About something that existed when she was a kid that doesn't exist anymore?
Yeah.
Well, what was it, man?
I don't know. I forget.
Well, what's the point of bringing it up, bud, if you don't remember what it is?
Just the thing when Phil City's mom said something about that she had what they don't have no more.
What I said, she was talking about, my mother said one time, she talked about a lot of stuff they had when they were kids that they don't have anymore. She talked about a lot of stuff. My dad, too. I know what they had. They had, in those days, I'll tell you one that I heard my father-in-law, my ex-father-in-law, talk about that nobody has any memory of except his generation. And it was going to the corner bar with a bucket to have the guy fill it up with beer.
What?
I swear to God. Now, this might be something that is strictly a German thing, because my father-in-law, Al, was raised by German immigrant parents. He was born in the United States, but his family was German. His parents spoke German at home, and it was his first language as a kid. That was the language that was spoken in their home. So only after he got into school and became, you know, familiar with, you know, and started to associate with the kids in the neighborhood, etc., did he begin to speak English. But German was his language. But he would say that oftentimes his father or his mother would send him down to the corner tavern and have them fill the bucket that he had with beer.
Well, so they were drinking the beer out of a bucket.
Well, I don't know what they did with it. They might have refrigerated it or put it on ice, but that's how you got your beer. I mean, you didn't go to the store in some neighborhoods. You didn't go to the store and buy a six-pack or necessarily get a... I guess in those days you just bought big bottles of it. When did the six-pack start? Does anybody know?
Yeah, I'd like to know about that. As much beer as I drink, you know.
Yeah, I like to have some suds occasionally, but I'd never imagine the world won't have no six-packs in it.
Well, I don't know. We don't drink beer. Frank doesn't. He drinks scotch. I like my sherries, of course. Do you know what sherry is, bud?
Uh-uh.
Well, it is like wine, except it's sweeter. I don't really know what sherry is either, but I like it.
You drink sherry?
Yes.
I tell you, man, I can't stand that stuff.
Well, Phil, we're not talking about guzzling it on a Friday night. It's something you have after dinner.
I understand what sherry is. What do you mean, guzzle on a Friday night?
That's the only reason why a man would know anything about sherry. Let me ask you something. Did you ever drink sherry?
Did I ever drink? Yeah, I'm sure I've had sherry.
No, but did you drink it to get drunk?
I don't ever remember sitting down and cracking a bottle of sherry and saying, oh, I think I'm going to get hammered. No. I think I had a sip of some. I don't think I would ever, I would never order it. I would never drink it as a rule. It does, for all intents and purposes, sound like strictly a female drink, and I don't mean anything by this, Margaret, but it sounds like an old lady drink.
Yeah, no kidding.
What's that supposed to mean?
Well, Margaret, I mean, come on, you know.
What does that mean?
Margaret, I'm not saying you're an old lady, but it sounds like an old lady drink.
Yeah, it sounds like an old lady gonna drink that.
You said you never even heard of sherry.
I said I heard about it, but I don't think anybody that I know would ever drink it.
You don't know any old ladies?
No.
I do. I knew old ladies that drank it. My aunt drank it. And when my mother was old, she drank it. Okay?
Well, I drank it, and I'm not an old lady.
Fine. Fine. I'm not saying that you are. It reminds me of old ladies, sherry. But the point I'm making here is that when they were kids, that's what they did. That's what Al said that they did. They'd go down and get beer in a bucket. I don't know when the six-pack came around. My mother, I just remember now, bud, when my mom said, the ice wagon. Is that what I was talking about?
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, you said it. Your mom, they went out and got ice?
Yeah, that's what they had to get was ice. They had the guy with the ice wagon would come down the street, and they'd have to go out and get ice, and they would put that in the ice box, which was what they kept things cold in. I mean, they there was literally an icebox in those days. That's why I a lot of times I'll say to people, put it in the icebox, and I and they'll look at me like, where'd you come up with that word? I grew up with that word. I mean, the icebox has always been the refrigerator. I mean, every time I look at the refrigerator, but my folks called it the icebox because when they were kids, that's what they had. It was a box with ice, you know. Did you ever watch The Honeymooners?
Yeah.
Well, that thing that Ralph and Alice had?
That's an icebox?
Yeah, that's why they had a tray under it.
That's why they had that tray under it, yeah, because the ice would melt. All right, and the icebox is something that is like strictly from the first half of the 20th century. It's not anything that anybody with, I mean, I think it went out of fashion, but people still, poor people still had it into the 40s. All right, we'll be right back. World famous Phil Henry Show. What's up with Walmart, man? Walmart, are they going out on strike on Friday? I hope so. I'm in favor of that. I'm in favor of that. I'd like to see people just slow it down and chill it out. And you know what, Walmart? You can go and make your money on another day. Because, you know, that whole exhibition on Black Friday is starting to make me sick. We'll be right back. World famous Phil Henry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Henry Show.
Welcome back here on the Phil Henry Show. And my good friend, my close personal friend, Mr. Dan Northcraft, has sent me a link here. And I was going to try to get it up on our Phil TV and HD screen. I'm not sure if I can. But this does tell us a little bit here about beer and the six-pack. And it's from a site called the 11th Hour. Friday Beer Blogging Six-Pack Edition is the name of the article, but the writer is, it goes into some detail, and it's very good stuff. It's from a site called the 11th Hour. The six-pack came about in the 30s.
Back then they called six-pack.
And the reason why they called it a six-pack is that the beer makers in the 1930s reasoned that six bottles of beer was about the most a woman could carry home from the market. So why is the basic unit of beer packaging the six-pack? Where did that standard come from? So the actual decision, the six-pack, was invented. It's still a point of contention. There's a lot of different answers to this. Pabst was the first brewery to package beer in six-packs. After numerous studies, it was determined that six cans was the ideal weight for the average housewife to cart home from the store. Remember that in the 40s, things were different from today. Whatever that means. I'm just quoting the writer here. Yes, things were different in the 40s, but maybe it was because of the way that we viewed women or what the women were able to carry. Nonetheless, that was the first time that a six-pack was created. And like I said, my father-in-law grew up in a German part of Chicago. And it was very much the neighborhood. It was not suburban. It wasn't going to the grocery store with mom. It was, it was walking down to a tavern to get your beer. So they decided that that's how they'd make it. This is cool. The dumbest way of carrying a six-pack. What the hell?
That's the stupid sight.
All right, anyway. So what else we want to do? All right, and welcome back to the show. All right, I want to give a little shout-out and a plug-a-rooski and all that stuff to our website, philhenryshow.com. That's philhenryshow.com, where you can go and get a backstage pass. And a backstage pass would afford you the opportunity to, for instance, watch us on Phil TV in HD, which is what we're doing right now. We are on, you know, on our little TV screen set thing. You can also listen to the live streaming of the Milwaukee Lion games. You can get downloads of those games, downloads of our shows, downloads of our archives, which go back over a decade, and truly the greatest radio show in the history of radio we have in our archives. And we also do a podcast, which is available on iTunes, gives you a little sample of what we have available in the archive. I don't know how much longer we're going to do the podcast, by the way.
What? You're kidding.
No, I'm not kidding.
Well, Phil, people love the podcast.
Well, people love the podcast, but the fact of the matter is this is where we make our living, right here. And so the podcast is a way of promoting. but it's not necessarily going to go on indefinitely. You know, it's all about making money. Sports fans, it's all about making, we don't give nothing away, you know.
Well, I mean, everybody knows it's supposed to be free.
No, not everybody knows it. What are you talking about, supposed to be free? Ain't nothing free. Free. So our podcast is out there. Now, obviously, we are, you know, we're going to have our podcast sponsored, and that's always a consideration. But our website is where the money is made. Not even the radio show. Not even this radio show that you're listening to right now. Not even this radio show doesn't even come close to making the money that our website makes. Doesn't even scratch the surface. Doesn't even get anywhere. And we've been doing this radio show. We took that break for a year. Yeah, sure, but we did.
Yeah, but what are you saying?
Well, read my lips, bud. What am I saying? I'm saying that where is it at in today's economy? What is driving today's media? Where's the money? What's going on? I'm going to tell you. I'm going to say it as clear as I can. I'm not trying to hurt anybody's feelings. I'm not trying to offend. I'm just going to tell you right off, okay? If there's anybody in the radio press that wants me to repeat this again for the 9 millionth time, if there's anybody in the legitimate press that wants me to repeat this again for the 9 millionth time, if there's anybody who hosts a radio show that hasn't gotten the word yet, if there's anybody who is anybody doing a podcast, they already know this is true. If there's anybody anywhere that doesn't has not yet gotten the reality of what's happening in the world today, let me just give it to you straight up. You ready? You ready?
Yeah.
This radio show, and I would dare say it would be true of others, but I don't know how other guys make their living. Radio doesn't make a dime. Not a dime. The money that I make with my website and other business that I do. The radio show doesn't make dime one. This is like, for instance, if my income was a beach ball, the radio show would be a BB.
Well, you can't say it's that extreme.
I absolutely can say it's that. Let me put it to you this way. If I had to rely upon the income from the income generated from just the radio show, if I had to rely on that to live, I'd starve to death. I'd die. I'd be thrown out of my house. My house would be foreclosed on, and I would not eat, and I would die. Is that clear enough?
Well, you're probably exaggerating, right?
I'm not exaggerating.
Well, I mean, you're just exaggerating to make a point.
No, I'm not exaggerating to make a point. No, I'm not.
So what are you saying?
Oh, my God.
Spit it out.
I'm spitting it out, man. I'm spitting it out. How much more?
You're saying that the money generated the advertising on this radio show
wouldn't pay for tap water. It doesn't pay for anything. It's useless. I could give it to charity. I should give it to charity, although the charity would still go broke. You understand? The income, the real money, the real money, the money. In other words, I flew back to Washington, D.C., to visit my friend who was having surgery. I flew first class on Virgin Airlines. I stayed at the Ritz-Carlton in Georgetown. Now, the reason why I was able to fly first class on Virgin America and stay at the Ritz-Carlton in Georgetown is because I earn a fat income from my website and my other business interests, such as voiceover, such as acting, etc. All right? The radio show that I do here that people are listening to me now in America on, this thing is whatever you want to call it. It's a way for you to listen to me, and that's great, and I'm glad that you do. But the money that this show generates, the money that is, I should say, generated for this show, the advertising dollars that are generated for this show wouldn't pay for a suit. It wouldn't make enough money for me to pay the electric bill. Now do you get it?
It's still a little, I think I'm not clear. You're saying that it wouldn't, you're saying
it doesn't make a lot of money.
You must be the stupidest people I've ever talked to in my life. Yes. Yes, yes, yes. Okay? All right, so in any event, having said all of that, why the hell do I got to spend all this time?
It just doesn't seem likely, Phil.
Well, you know what, man? That's because you're living in another world. you're living in another world. You and a whole lot of people like you. You think that it's business as usual. The world has changed. Media has changed. What, where the money is has changed. Radio doesn't make any money for anybody. It is a, I don't know what they're doing. I think it's still making money for the suits. You know, those guys, they'll rob their way right to their graves. But the rest of us, man, we've got other jobs. We'll be right back. World famous Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry.
Disgusting picture.
What disgusting picture?
The one you have on the screen right now.
That's the best picture it's ever been.
That's a picture of Michelle Bachmann sucking down that corn dog. We can't ever take that picture down. That's fantastic.
I think it is vile, and I think it's an insult to women.
Why do you think that?
I think it's an insult to women, and I don't want to...
You don't want to what?
I don't want to have to explain. I don't think I should.
Margaret, I understand how you think it's insulting to Ms. Bachmann. I would understand that. But it's a funny picture. Folks, if you don't know what we're talking about, this picture is about a year old. It was before the president, obviously the presidential election. I don't know how old the picture is. It was back when Michelle Bachmann was still a viable candidate for the Republican nomination, I guess. When was that?
Probably about, well, when? What do you mean?
He's talking about the Republican, I think it was last spring.
Last spring? Okay, it could have been last spring. And it was the picture of, no, it wasn't last spring. It was two summers ago. It was the summer of 2011.
Why do you say that?
Because she's eating a corn dog, which means that I think she was at some state fair. And I don't think state fairs happen unless it's summertime.
Well, get a load of you, Mr. Detective. Ooh, you're a real detective, aren't you?
Well, Mark, what are you, being a smartass?
No, I think that's very impressive.
Yeah, I think that it was during the summer, and I believe it was the summer of 2011. I don't think it was this past summer, because by then Romney had it wrapped up, and that looks like the time Michelle Bachmann thought she was all this in a bag of chips, man. She thought she was... Remember when Bachmann thought she was a shoe-in?
I do, yeah.
Yeah, she thought she was going to be all elected and everything. Wasn't going to happen.
Wasn't going to happen. She thought she was really something, man. And I knew, you know, it was... See, she's the whole reason, not to go over the election again, but she and people like her... You want to know why Republicans are dead in the water and why today they're sitting there wondering whether they got a party left and whether they don't know what the hell they're going to do and, oh, my God, what went wrong and, oh, we got to do better with our message and... I mean, all of this stuff they could have seen happening. All of it, they could have seen it coming, man. They could have seen it coming right after McCain. All of a sudden, they're doing soul searching. These guys were brain dead from the gate. After they got their ass handed to them with McCain, they should have known then. They should have known then, because we were telling them, if I knew, and I'm not a genius.
Yeah, but you're never going to live down the fact that you thought it was going to be Giuliani.
I picked Giuliani. That's what we're calling him now, by the way, folks, because we can't call him Giuliani because Bud's an idiot.
Yeah, blame me.
Well, you're the one that kept calling him Giuliani, so we...
Yeah, so we're just going to call him Giuliani. I said I thought it was Giuliani and Clinton because I figured that...
Yeah, why did you?
Because I thought it was. I wasn't thinking very critically in those days. I just thought, oh, you know, I know how these things go. It's a slam dunk. I mean, you got to admit, man, the whole Obama thing that came along, it was a revolutionary moment. So when that went down, I realized, well, I was wrong about that. But I mean, my instincts, I may not call the race the right way, and I may not necessarily call Super Bowls the right way. You know, I'm not exactly a guy that is the best, most accurate gambler in the room. But I'm going to tell you something. When it comes to trends, when it comes to historical trends, I am never wrong. Never.
Well, what do you mean by that?
But what I'm talking about right now. The whole attitude of the country toward the Republican message, the Republican slash conservative message, the Tea Party seemed all wrong to me. When the Tea Party first happened in the early part of 2009, when the first rumblings of the Tea Party took place, and I remember we were talking to a guy who was a Tea Party guy, the whole thing seemed absolutely wrong to me. It just seemed, it didn't work, you know? I'm thinking, what is it about this is just not making sense? And because it didn't. It didn't make any sense, given the fact that Obama hadn't been in office 14 seconds, and already there's people pissed off about this, that, something else when it comes to taxes. You know, I understand that people are going to be upset about taxes, but the reaction to Obama seemed out of whack. It seemed over the top, given the fact that the man had obviously won, and he, you know, he wasn't a squeaker like this last one, if you want, even want to call this last one a squeaker. And it was obviously a major trend in the country away from the Republican leadership that had been provided up to that point. I'm not saying that it was necessarily anti anything. It was just there was a trend away from it. And now comes this movement of people that claim to be very populist and very widespread, and they're rejecting out of hand all this stuff that's happening, stuff that was endorsed by the Republican leadership, which, of course, was the bailout, you know, the TARP money and everything that was going on with the economy around the meltdown of 2008. And these, here are people who don't seem to get any of that. There's just too much government spending. They were just kind of freaking out about all of that stuff, even though they didn't seem to understand what the world markets were going through and what actually had happened with banks and with these so-called toxic assets and so forth. They just didn't want all this government spending. But then, of course, they wanted to maintain the Medicare. So, you know, and they didn't want the entitlements touched. So it didn't make any sense. So I wasn't buying it. And then along comes this Michelle Bachmann thing. Which is the same thing as far as I was concerned, it was the same thing as the Sarah Palin thing. And I am not saying she was a female, so therefore there's a conservative female, and that's got all the, you know, everybody's blood pumping. I'm just saying that whole idea that the real conservative wing of the Republican Party was really the voice of America. That's not what I was hearing. That's not what I was seeing. You know, and Bachmann, even in the Republican Party, is considered to be stupid. I mean, people think she's an idiot. In her own party, they think she's stupid. And there wasn't anybody in the leadership of that party that wanted that woman anywhere near the presidential nomination, just like they didn't want Sarah Palin. Number one, because they knew that they weren't going to win. But number two, they knew they didn't really represent mainstream America. They didn't, you know, but the conservatives think that they do, or they did. They always felt that they were really the voice of America. They always felt that they were it was the great unwashed and the great silent majority and all that bull crap. And they never really got it, man. They just never really understood. No, the country is moving away from that. And so the election takes place, another election, another one that they completely get wrong because they don't know what the hell's going on out there. And with all of the so-called metrics and all of the so-called, I don't know, focus groups and all that crap, and all of the research and all of the polls, and they miss something that's completely fundamentally true, and that is the voter base, the electorate is changing. All of a sudden, these guys magically are getting religion after the election. Well, you know, we have to talk to people of color, and we have to be all-inclusive, and we have to, all of a sudden, within 24 hours, now they know what they did wrong. Why? What the hell took you so long, man? Why did it take a whole elect? Why did it take two whole elections for you guys to get that? Two. Not one, two. And now they have this conversation about, well, we need to be all inclusive, and they're still arguing about it. There's still these imbeciles in that party saying,
well, I don't think we're ever not inclusive. We just, you know, that's to say that we didn't.
Why don't you just face the facts, man, that, you know, you were not communicating with the overwhelming majority of people that were, you know, the people voting for Obama. I heard a guy say, you know, this idiot O'Reilly, and that guy's about as dumb as it gets. Honest to God, is he stupid. Talk about dumb. O'Reilly is breaking down the election, and he says, now look at this. You know, if you don't think that it was the have-nots voting for Obama, take a look at this. See, it says right here that these people, low-income people, voted for Obama. So why wouldn't they want to have their entitlements and their this and their that? Well, first of all, O'Reilly, you moron, If you break the election down, it wasn't so much the have-nots. It was the minorities, the women, and the young. That's not necessarily have-nots. What you're missing was the minorities, the women, and the young people. Now, Romney, among others, said that Obama was buying off minorities, women, and young. He didn't say anything about low-income people. His research and all of his genius and all of his brain surgeons that were working for him, O'Reilly, they didn't say low-income people. They said minorities, women, and young people, which is even more damaging, albeit truthful in terms of how Romney felt about things. You want to clean things up for Romney, you do it on your own time, man. The fact is, what he said was even more damaging. He said that minorities want to be bought, women want to be bought, and young people want to be bought. Any way you cut it, even if he's got Bill O'Reilly doing all of his press releases for him and writing all of his bullcrap for him, you can't ignore the fact that this guy thinks that the people in this country that want to be bought off are minorities and women and young people. Not good old-fashioned big forehead white guys like you, though, Bill. You got too much integrity for that. You don't want to be bought off. But them minorities now. So that was the whole problem, okay? So, you got a lot of people in that party, man, that, I don't know how many decades we are removed from civil rights. You know that whole thing about how black people don't have to sit in the back of the bus? And I'm not saying that the bigots and the racists are all conservatives. I'm just saying you guys are going to have to try to get it off the front page.
Now, you know that what you're doing right now is all wrong for AM talk radio.
Absolutely, yes.
You do?
Yes.
Well, then why are you doing it?
Because I don't want to sit here bored to tears. I'm not going to sit here and what I'm saying right now is an anti-white guy thing. I understand that. And I know that talk radio is white guy radio. But what do you want me to do? You want me to sit here and lie? I'm telling you the truth. I'm educated. Anybody who wants to be educated, I'm laying it on them, okay? I'm not going to pander to anybody.
Well, I don't think that you're...
What?
Do you want me to call Mr. Hall and ask him about it?
No, I don't want you to call Mr. Hall and ask him about it. What the hell is with you, bud?
You got to call Mr. Hall every time. You don't have to call him. Yeah, but Mr. Hall might want to know about it.
I don't give a crap what he wants to know about. What is it with you, bud? No, you don't have to call Mr. Hall. Now,
But I already did.
Well, you're not... I don't want to put him on the air. So you understand what I'm saying? I don't want to talk to that idiot. So, just don't even put him on the air. Do you understand? Do not put David Hall on the air right now. You understand what I'm saying? Yeah, David.
Well, I mean, I told him to put me on. I wanted to talk to you.
What did I just say to you?
Yeah, but...
What did I just say to you?
I told him to put me on, though.
Hold on, David. What did I say to you?
Well, you just put Mr. Hall on hold.
Yes.
Well, I mean, don't be yelling at me. I just asked him if you were going to keep on cutting your throat tonight, or were you going to...
Cutting my throat?
Yeah, well, you're talking all this liberal talk. What do you think this is doing?
Well, I don't... Frankly, David, I don't even think you know.
And what's this stuff about how you don't make your living from radio?
I don't.
Well, I mean, it's true, but it's been a tough economy.
Oh, it's a tough economy. Well, I'll tell you what, man, you're the guy that goes out selling this thing, so I tell you what, why don't you just stay home if it's a tough economy? I feel for you, brother. Why don't you stay home and get some sleep?
Nah, don't be a smartass, Phil.
No, I'm not being a smartass if it's a tough economy. Well, why don't you just stay home and get yourself some sleep, okay? And you don't have to go out and pitch.
Well, look, you're making me sound like I'm some lazy slob.
I'm not calling you lazy. I'm calling you... uncreative. I'm calling you unaggressive or non-aggressive. I'm saying that you guys always use the economy as an excuse. You always use the, it's a bad economy. You remember what you said to me when we first met?
What?
You said, Phil, I like to under-promise and over-deliver.
That's right. That's my philosophy. I under-promise and over-deliver.
Well, guess what? You not only have under-promised, you've under-delivered, man. So...
Well, that's not fair because... You should have seen me in 2003. And
oh, well, I'll bet you that you were just something else, man, when everything was going great.
Well, I think it's bad for you to come out here and say that, I'm not selling the show.
You're not. You're not. You're this close. Well,
What did you say?
You're this. I was going to say you're this close to being fired, but...
Hey, Phil, that's not fair. I called you up to say to you that the reason why I can't sell your show is because you ain't talking enough white guy conservative stuff. Now...
Well, no. That's not how the game is played anymore, man. Do you understand? We're a whole new world now, man. Whole new world now. You don't, out there in sales land, you don't tell me what to say and then tell me it'll be easier to sell if you would just say this and that.
Well, what the hell are you doing?
You know what? Get out of here. You're bugging me.
Oh, man, you just hung up on him. Eat it.
I don't care. Giving me all of his problems. Boy, I'll tell you something right now. Do we have to break? Do we have to break, Dan? Because I think we need to. I want to get back on the phone with David.
Well, you know, Phil, don't tell him that he's a failure, even though he is, because...
Never mind. We'll be right back. World famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
Yeah. Look, man, all I'm saying is, if you give me just what...
You're listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
We got Frank?
Yeah.
World-famous Phil Hendry Show. Welcome back here. We got Frank Gray on the phone here. Frank Gray, the husband of Margaret Gray. Because we were talking here about Thanksgiving during the break, and I want to get an update. Where are you going, bud?
God, I'm going to my mom's house.
Robert?
Yeah, I'm my aunt.
Yeah, you're with your aunt. And Margaret, you and Frank are going where?
Well, we're probably going to visit Frank's sister in Portland, and we'll take Jason J. Delmonico with us. Sometimes we go back to Pennsylvania. We're not going this year. So we'll probably go visit Frank's sister.
Hey, Frank, how you doing?
Hey, young man, I'm better than Custer. How are you?
Good, good. So you guys are going up to Portland?
Yeah, we're going to go there. I mean, you know, my sister lives up there along with his husband, but I don't like the weather up there, you know. But Margaret wants to go, and we'll take Jason J. Delmonico because she's never been.
Just so people know, Frank, can you hold on for a minute?
Say that again?
Can you hold on for a minute?
Yeah.
Frank Gray has gender confusion.
Yes, I was going to tell the audience that, so they're not...
But he doesn't like to hear about it, right?
No, he doesn't. He thinks... All right, Frank.
What are you people talking about, anyway?
Don't worry about it, man. We just... I had to check on something. All right, the reason why I'm asking about Portland is, Margaret, you've been a big fan of Portland's for a long time.
Well, I love Portland. I don't think anyone... that's been to Portland doesn't love Portland. It's just, it's fun. It's just a lot of fun.
I personally can't take it up there. I hate it.
You hate it?
Yeah, Frank hates Portland, and he always has hated Portland. But I don't understand why.
Well, you don't understand why. That's great. Let me explain why. I hate Portland because it's a city that claims to be diverse. And yet, I don't know what makes it diverse.
Frank, it is diverse in that it is very eclectic.
Yeah, but what does that mean, it's eclectic? What, tell me, I want you to be specific now. We've had this conversation millions of times, but what, be specific now.
It is eclectic and diverse.
What does that mean?
Frank, don't get angry.
No, I'm not going to get angry, but he does this all the time. Every time we talk about Portland, he talks about how it's diverse, and he never... You know, and he never explains why it's diverse. He's always saying it's eclectic. And he's why is it eclectic and why is it diverse?
Frank, don't take that tone with me.
I'm not taking any tone with you, Margaret. I'm asking a question that I've asked 85 million times. And I'm begging you. I'm pleading with you. I get on my knees and I'll beg you. Please tell me. Please. Will you please, honey? What makes Portland, Oregon, so GD diverse and eclectic? The way, you know, you'd say it. He's always going eclectic, Frank. You know how he does it?
Yeah, she...
You called me he.
I'm sorry. She does it a lot on the show.
I'm telling you, Frank, honey, I like it because of the racial... diversity.
Right there. Okay, good. Thank you. That gives me something to hang my hat on. That gives me something to hang there. There's a place to start. It's like I'm a dying man in the desert, and I need water. and he's finally given me a small cup of water, something to keep. So you say there's racial diversity. Is that what you're saying?
I'm saying cultural, yes.
No. See, Phil, forgive me, but we have this...
I understand.
We have this discussion. No, you're not going to get away with it this time. Not this time. Like that Scorpio said in that Dirty Harry. When she said to Harry, she says, don't pass on me out. Don't pass out on me now. And I'm not calling you an oinker, honey. Okay?
Well, then watch the comparisons, all right?
All right, I'm just saying, don't pass out on me now. Now, you're not going to get away with that. Okay? You said racial diversity.
Yes, I said cultural.
No, you didn't.
You said racial, Margaret.
Hey, right there, see? Mr. Hendry's backing me up. You said racial. What's the music I'm hearing? I want to stand up, and now I'm standing up, and I'm buttoning my pants, and I don't know why.
It's the end of our show. It's the Battle Hymn of the Republic.
Hold on, I want...
Oh, for God's sake, is he saluting?
I'm not going to sit there with my pants down around my ankles while...
Oh, God, Frank, go in the other room and do that.
Why, there's no one home, okay? And Jason J. Delmonico is upstairs asleep.
All right, anyway, we'll see you guys tonight. Until then, let that be a lesson to you. Sorry, Margaret, I'm sorry you're having to deal with that, you know.
Phil Hendry.